Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Tuesday, June 1st, 2021, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today, we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 61, the first paragraph, starting with What Usually Happens. Reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Terry H., 12 Traditions, Rhonda R. The reader of the text this morning is Kara L. Dana P. will read page 164, and our backup reader is Robin P. The reference number for Monday, May 31st, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 17,047. That's 17,047. And for this morning, Tuesday, June 1st, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 17,051. That's 17,051. Our newcomer greeter this morning will be Lois P., and Robin P. will do the announcements. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Terry H. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Don. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve on your June team with a few of my favorite friends. This is Terry H. from Pensacola, Florida, a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater through God's grace. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, Adela Pass.
Thank you so much, Terry H., and I'll now ask Rhonda R. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you for your service this month. I'm Rhonda R., grateful, recovered, compulsive eater in Atlanta, Georgia. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you for the chance to do service.
Thank you so much, Rhonda R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 61, the first paragraph, that begins with what usually happens, reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. I will now ask Kara L. to begin reading. Good morning, Kara.
Good morning, Don. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrestle satisfaction and happiness out of the world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? Do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. And I'm going to say the line I always say. I love this paragraph, and I do. I have so many things written. My biggest thing written here is self-seeking. This, for me, is the definition of self-seeking for me. And I like, and selfishness and dishonesty, you know, I like that it tells me not only am I demanding, but it also tells me I can be kind to try to get the things that I want, try to get the things that I think I need, that I can couch things in trying to do well for others. I can couch things in, you know, it's their fault. It is such a perfect description of me. And I know today that when I fall into this paragraph and I'm doing what it says in this paragraph, that's when I need to dive into the steps. I need to get into a step 10 in the situation and see, where am I doing this? And I need to ask my higher power, please remove that character defect and direct my attention. You know, how can I best serve you? How can I best serve my family, my fellows, my friends, right? Give me an intuitive thought, an inspiration, or a decision. You know, move me forward in your will. So all those things. Because I know when I do this, I love the end. It not only it tells me what I do, but it tells what others do because I'm doing that. You know, it says, okay, don't people want to retaliate when you try to control them? You know, don't they, and I'm not, even though I think I'm helping everybody, I'm not. So many times I just step back and I say, okay, God, direct me. How can I best be of service in this situation? Because I know what I think is right and what I think is best for everyone often only creates confusion rather than harmony. And only my higher power today can create harmony. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kara L., for getting us started. And I'm now going to be opening up the lines to take names of people who would like to share in this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share with us this morning?
Deb E.
Deb E.
Donna B.
Donna B. Okay, let's start with those two, and then we'll take
Matt
more
JF.
Names. Andrea?
Matt JF.
Oh, Matt JF. Sorry about that. Matt JF. Okay, let's start with those three, Deb E., Donna B., and Matt JF. Good morning, Deb, and please let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And what jumped out at me with this paragraph is self-pity and how much self-pity I was always in, how easy it was for me still to fall into it. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. I always thought it was everybody else's fault. It didn't even occur to me to look at my side of the street, to look at what I could change, what I could do, what I could improve on, how I could be of service. None of that. You know, he is sure that other people are more to blame. It's my default. I can't even stop it now. Like, it still happens. The only difference is that now I catch myself right away. But I've noticed, like, it's just the first thing I think of, it's like, oh, it's them. Because, and from this work that we do with the steps, I've discovered that the reason I go to blame so quickly is because I have an old belief that I cannot make mistakes, that if I make mistakes, I'm unacceptable. And that belief is so deeply ingrained in me that it prevents me from having the first reaction be, oh, where did I go wrong? What can I change? How can I be of service to this person? How can I look at them with compassion instead of thinking everything's their fault? You know, I have situations where over years I've blamed people and had no idea I was blaming them when the blame should have been on me. And working the steps has really taught me how to take responsibility for my actions and to own my stuff and to look at my part, and that there is always my part. You know, the fourth step shows me there is always my side of everything. It doesn't mean that the other people didn't do something wrong. It doesn't mean that they might not also be to blame, but I can't have that as my default behavior. I can't have that as the first thing I think of, like, oh, it's got to be them. It couldn't possibly be me. It can possibly be me because I'm just a human being and I do make mistakes, and it's okay to make mistakes. And that's taken me a long time to to understand and to believe and to accept. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Deb E. from Israel. Donna B., will you share with us now, followed by Matt J. F.? And if you're just joining us, we are on page 61, the first paragraph, starting with what usually happens. So good morning, Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna B., a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. I used to joke that on my tombstone, it would say, "She tried really hard." These sentences, "He decides to exert himself more," and "Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well?" That is the story of my life. When I feel an emotional or physical discomfort, or when I look around my life or the world outside of my own personal life, and I see something that does not meet my expectations, my pre-programmed brain tells me that I need to fix it. I need to do whatever it takes to restore myself to a sense of feeling of safety and security. And I have believed that that is solely my responsibility, that I am a lone person out in this mean world colluding against me. And when I face discomfort, I have to harness all the power in myself, all of the skills and deficits that I have, to try to make things better for me so that I can be restored to ease and comfort. And I can tell you that it does not work. It doesn't work. It's exhausting, and it makes a mess of my life and the lives of the people around me. It isolates me. It causes a great deal of pain. And the worst part is that belief system is in contradiction to the possibility that there could be a power greater than myself who wants to help me, who has a plan, who can restore me to sanity. It's a very difficult way to live, and one that I wrestle with on a daily basis. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Donna B. from Colorado. Matt J.F., will you share with us now, please, and let us know where you're calling from.
Thank you very much for your service. This is Matt J.F. from Kentucky. And, you know, it's funny. There are times when I feel like, oh, vision, I just hear the same voices so much, like maybe I don't need to keep calling in. And then I call in and I hear a voice, and it might be a new voice or an old voice, and they'll say something, and it will kind of uncover something that I really needed to have uncovered. And this morning it was that someone described this paragraph as the definition of self-seeking, and I don't know how that had always eluded me before, but it had. Because self-seeking is is a concept that I always kind of struggle to differentiate from selfishness, but I don't anymore now, because it is it's this paragraph. It's not so much that other people aren't following my script. It's that I don't have control. It's that everything is either my fault or someone else's fault, and that is my disease's game. So my disease for me is like there's this, not the allergy, but my disease is there's a deep belief inside me that I'm a worthless piece of crap and that I have nothing of any value to offer to anyone or anything. And it would be great if I had never been born, but since I was, I should really kill myself with a box of donuts. And I spent, you know, most of my life doing that until a couple of years ago. And this is my disease's game, because it's like heads it wins, tails I lose. Because when I live my life as if everything that happens is either my fault or someone else's fault, like it's always a disaster because it always switches, right? I can go 99 days and everything is someone else's fault and feel great about myself, but then on the 100th day, I'm presented with incontrovertible evidence that no, it's my fault. And for those 99 days, my disease is just waiting. And that one day when it's like, oops, I screwed up, my disease is like, see, I'm right. You are a worthless piece of crap. You should just kill yourself. And the thing is that it's not my fault or anyone else's fault. It just is. Life is. It happens. I perceive it not very clearly. I tell myself stories about why things happen, which it usually boils down to, it's my fault or someone else's fault. And that's all fine because I'm wired that way. Like that's, you know, whatever your personal beliefs, my belief is we in evolution and I'm the descendant of the most nervous monkeys. So I get nervous and I need to explain the world to myself in ways that don't always have to make sense. But here's the thing. The footwork for me is just a mechanism, thank you, of reconnecting to that idea that God is everything. It's not me. It's not anyone else. It's just what is. And that's where serenity lies for me. My path.
Thank you so much, Matt J.F. from Kentucky. And I'm now going to be opening up the lines, but want to let you know where we're at. We're on page 61, the first paragraph, what usually happens, reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. So although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your shared every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share with us this morning?
Pasadena, California.
Let's try that again. Was there Anne in there?
Yes,
Tova.
Anne in Pasadena.
Anne?
Tova from Illinois.
Okay, and Tova. So, Anne, what's your initial of your last name?
Anne M.
Okay, Anne M. And Tova. And what's your initial, Tova?
Tova E.
Tova E. And who else did I miss?
Stacy
F.
Stacy
K.
Stacy K. Very good. And who else?
Enid F.
C.
Was it Dina?
Enid, E-N-I-D.
Okay, Enid
F.
Enid F. Okay. And who else?
Jamie C.
Jamie C. And who else did I miss?
Janice K.
Okay, I have Anne M., Tova E., Stacy K., Enid F., Jamie C., Janice K. Was there someone else in that mix that I missed? Nope. Okay, let's go with that. Anne M., please share with us, followed by Tova E. Good morning, Anne, and please let us know where you're calling from.
Good morning. This is Anne M. from Pasadena, California, and I'm a compulsive overeater and so grateful to be here. Thank you for your service and everybody doing service on the meeting. It's really good to hear this reading and how just vital it is for me to know that I don't have to try anymore, that I have a higher power that I can rely upon. And one of the real breakthroughs in my recovery was learning that I didn't have to attach any, in fact, I don't anymore, judgment or self-hatred to the notion that I'm self-centered. I'm an addict, and that's just how I'm wired. And I think of that as it's just a weather report. You know, is it sunny out or is it raining? You know, am I being self-centered or am I not? And very frequently I am. And if I'm in that place of being really self-centered, then there is no room for my higher power to move. And my entire recovery depends upon my higher recovery, my higher power. And that is just, that's everything. And this notion that I am to blame for things is, I've come to learn, it's a delusion that was absolutely necessary for me to survive my childhood, because I came up, my compulsive overeating developed in an environment of mental illness and alcoholism. And I couldn't have known as a kid, especially pre-verbally, and then of course just when I didn't have much language, that things were as bad as they were. I just couldn't know that. If somehow that had broken through so that I cognitively understood that at whatever age, 5, 6, 7, I would have ended my life. I did try to take my life when I was 8. And it was, this delusion was really important because most things actually weren't my fault at that age, you know, but there was nothing I could do but believing that they were my fault. You know, it just gave me this delusion that things weren't so bad as they were. And I developed an eating disorder, and thank God I've come of age in the time when the 12 steps exist and that there is relief. Today, I'm just going through so many transformations that are all part of my recovery in this program, and it's just requiring me to surrender to my Creator more and more. That's a huge job transformation, a change in home, medical changes, and just every day what I need to do is just continually stop trying to the point where I just let everything flow like water, and what I'm trying to just do in my life and in my recovery is just receive the love of my Creator and just relax, because my Creator has well-being for me, and the extent to which I can just take any trying and put it in my recovery, that's a good place to put it. So I'm grateful for this meeting and this step study this morning, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Ann M. from California. Tova E., will you share with us now, followed by Stacy K.? Good morning, Tova. Please share where you're calling from.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm so grateful to be on the meeting. I came back to OA about March 3rd and had no idea when I started that food wasn't my biggest problem, that it would be a big health problem of my husband, and that the 12 steps would help me get through it. And I mean, thank God the food and abstinence has been great. Thanks to God, I'm feeling much better. I'm down some weight and I've been abstinent from my trigger foods. But the biggest thing I'm thankful for is the fellowship, the 12 steps, the reading today, realizing like I don't control everything. It's not all about me. I can't fix everything. And, you know, after weeks of intense suffering with anxiety and depression, my husband was finally admitted to a psych ward yesterday. And it was one of the most painful days, I'm sure, of his life and my life, because I had to drive away and leave him there. And 2 years ago, I was stupid. He went to a psych ward. He called me the next day and said, I can't be here. Get me out of here. And like an idiot, I thought I could control everything and I could fix things. And I picked him up. And now looking back, I realized what a horrible mistake that was. And so now, thanks to the program, I can let go and let God and listen to the doctor and understand that I can't fix everything and I'm not God. And, you know, I can make space for the doctors to be smart and for, you know, things to run its course and for God to help my husband. And actually, I think that's the hospital. I've got to pick it up. I'm going to try to call back into the meeting. But thank you, everyone, so much for supporting me and helping me and for having the meeting every day. Thank you.
Thank you, Tova E. Stacy K., will you share with us now, followed by Enid F.? Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. This is Stacy K. in Colorado. I am a compulsive overeater and glad to be here, you all. I could talk about this topic forever. I guess I learned over time, and I'm still learning, right, at another level, that I don't even know what's good for me. Never mind what's good for you, right? And sometimes, though, I still think I do. I think I still know what's best. I do this gratitude prayer. A part of my gratitude is about thanking God for protecting me from what I thought, you know, I wanted. And blessing me with what I didn't even know I needed. And that's the story of my program, you know. I don't know. And, you know, I just wanted to share real quick, you know, the example that's in my life constant, you know, my son, and how, you know, he has all these challenges. And he struggles a lot. And in my attempts to help, in my attempts to guide him or, you know, whatever you want to call it, I still am trying to manage and control and think I know best. I have no idea what it's like to be in his body, in his mind, and in his heart. And I pretend like I do, like I still try to, at times, I'm better at it. Like I want to force him. I want to make him learn what he needs to learn, when he needs to learn it, and he needs to get past this and, like, you know, move on or whatever, you know, like, and that wasn't my experience, you know, in my life, I had different challenges, you know, compulsive overeating, and it took me, I don't know how many years, I was introduced to these 12 steps almost 33 years ago, and it took me a long time. I mean, things got a lot better, but it took me a long time to, you know, make a beginning with the food, you know, to put it down. And, you know, when I get to keep practicing, that's, and keep looking at it, you know, looking at my inventory, looking at my fears, looking at, you know, this self, this ego that crops up, and I get to go to God with it. I have to go to God in all things. I don't know. I still don't know. I ask God almost every day in my prayer and meditation and my two-way prayer, God, show me. Show me how to show up for my son, you know, and I get the same responses back, you know, about love and tolerance and patience and kindness. And you know, yeah, and this guidance, you know, that, you know, I know little about. But anyway, that's all I got. I just thank you all and thank you, God, you know, for my sobriety, for my abstinence, and for my recovery today. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Stacey K. from Colorado. Enid F. will have you share now, followed by Jamie C. Good morning, Enid, and please let us know where you're calling from.
Good morning. This is Enid, recovering compulsive overeater from Chicago. What a great reading. Thank you. This is directed to the newcomers or those that have lost their way. This sounds like a lot of self-blame and negativity, but in my experience, looking at the areas where I've had character defects or been not observant of myself, I just want to say that this is one of the keys to great happiness for me. When I acknowledge what my part is in step four or step 10, I am given such freedom, such a sense of, okay, I had a part in it. And it has released me and helped me to embrace the program and given me a lot. Yes, there are times where a resentment can come up or I want people to be a different way. And when I acknowledge that, I'm freed from my resentments. I'm freed from my machinations of wanting things to turn out a certain way. And I still have contributions to make. There are things I can do. If you think about the Serenity Prayer, there are things I can do and there are things I can't control. And that provides a lot of serenity and a lot of peace. And I just want to say, keep coming back. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Enid F. from Illinois. Now, Jamie C., will you share with us, followed by Janice K., and then I'll be opening up the lines. We are on page 61, the first paragraph, What Usually Happens. And we're commenting on that one paragraph. So, Jamie C., please share with us.
Hi, this is Jamie C. I'm a compulsive overeater from Pennsylvania. Thank you for letting me share today. Thank you for your service. And just thank you to everyone that shared before. I'm so appreciative of the amount of vulnerability on this line and you know, just willingness to share and be honest with one another. I can be honest in that I have gotten a little bit far from the big book lately, and I'm just so glad that I was able to join the meeting today at this paragraph, because it's like, it's just so, it's such an important reminder that this book just like, it just speaks to me so much in my eating and my history with food. And, you know, what jumped out at me is the, what usually happens? This is a question that I can ask myself all the time. You know, when I look at the fact that I've tried so many different ways to control my disease, to deny my disease, and to, you know, punish myself for not doing the right things, or that I thought were the right things, you know, and going back to that failure again, like this is what always happens when I am like trying to muscle my way through it. I, like it says, I exert myself more. So my next diet's going to be, you know, more restrictive. It's going to be more complicated. It's going to be more torturous. You know, my next plan, these great plans that I always have to control everything, you know, they just get more and more overwhelming. And so the rebound of that in my life has always been, you know, just more and more pain and more struggle. And I do have to remind myself all the time, you know, that I don't have to do that anymore. That I can let it go, and that I can just let God. And that to me looks like, you know, a daily reprieve. It looks like a constant asking for help and guidance. And just an awakeness, an awareness to this life, and that I don't need to have this tight, tight grip around everything in it. It's so much better when I let it go. I know that for sure. It is just so much better when I can give it to God. Thank you so much for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Jamie C. from Pennsylvania. Janice K., will you share with us now? And then I'll be opening up the lines to take more names. Good morning, Janice. Star one, Janice.
Okay, it helps to be off mute. Okay, this is bedrock for me. In my big book, from the bottom of page 50, or 60, excuse me, from the bottom of page 60 to the top of page 62, when I read it for myself, I get to substitute I and me for he and him. And yeah, I am selfish. I never realized it. And when I came to visions was when they told me, or when I learned at any rate, that a good motive can be selfish too. I was shocked. What do you mean? Well, I found out, and I find out that I generally try to get my way by being gracious. And even when I try to be kind, I have an ulterior motive. I have an end game. I am definitely a victim of the delusion that I can wrest happiness and satisfaction out of the world if I just manipulate right. And absolutely, I am a person who produces confusion and not harmony. And it's like I look at this and I think that when I look at this, there's like this stunning realization of this is how I am. How dare I go out in the world this way? Well, basically because everybody else is the same. Because we are all that way. it makes it very humbling, and it makes other people in a curious kind of way much more acceptable, because I know my faults. I know my character defects. Man, they come up all the time. And I know that not everyone has the resources I do. I mean, I can come across, I trip across my faults daily, and I hand them over. And if my higher power can love me, selfish, mean, and ornery as I am, please believe that he also loves you. I don't know who I'm saying that to, but you know who you are. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. I pass.
Thank you, Janice K. Now I'm going to be opening up the lines again. I'll take about three more names. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your shared every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share with us?
Robin P.
Robin P.
Katie S.
Katie S. And I'll take one more name.
Kim T.
Kim T.
Carol.
Okay.
T.
Okay. Sorry, I don't have any more time, but please come back tomorrow. We'd love to hear from you. Robin P., would you share with us, followed by Katie S.? Thank you, Robin.
Thanks for your service, Dawn. I'm Robin P. I'm a very, very grateful recovered compulsive overeater, currently in Vero Beach, Florida, on our way to New Mexico, and today. And I'm it's that illusion of control. And I'm not just powerless over food. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And my illusion of control that I'm not powerless over people, places, or things can lead to the mental obsession, which can, God forbid, then lead to a food. So it's so important for me. And I'm reminded when it comes up again and rears its ugly head, you know, my sister's been going through a lot of pain and anxiety. And I keep thinking I can fix her and help her. And if she would just be open, I could help her. And I can't help her. God can help her. I can pray for her. And I have to let go. And I'm not here to save her. And that's that illusion of control that I can save another human being. And it's from a good place, but it's playing God. And I once met someone in a program who said that her name used to be Mrs. God, that her husband used to call her Mrs. God. And I thought, that's so funny. And it's just such a good reminder for me that God is God, and I am a part of God, and I get to pray to God and pray for my sister, and that's all I can do right now for her. And just every time I think of her, I literally take my hands and lift them up to God and go, okay, God, here you go, and that helps me. So God bless everybody with a very blessed afternoon day. I'm so grateful I got to share.
Thank you so much, Robin P. from Mexico. Now, Katie S., will you share with us, followed by Kim T.? Good morning, Katie.
Hi, yes, I'm Katie S. I'm from Southern California, compulsive overeater, and active bulimic. I'm very new. I've shared a couple times on the line. I have 3 years of sobriety in AA, but I come here to a food program as a complete newcomer who is absolutely the actor that's trying to play the director. You know, I've identified that so much of what's been said today is that idea of like fault finding and blame and self-shaming is something that I live with a lot. You know, I ran my life on self-will and I accomplished a lot of things when I was younger. And the problem is that, you know, that only goes so far. And there were certain things in my life that came up that I absolutely, I had no power over. And that's the food, and that was alcohol for me. And with the food, it's just, I eat because I'm afraid of taking myself out into the world, because I don't think I'm capable, you know, and I'm looking for jobs right now, trying to get another job. And I just see it as such a self-defeating thing. You know, I have a college degree and yet I feel like I'm just not capable. I'm not capable and I want to control things. I want to be able to get the job that I want, have the schedule that I want, be able to, you know, and I'm great at planning out my day and like what that's supposed to look like. And I'm also really good at not doing it. And then just getting into shame. Why can't I do this? Why am I incapable? Why is it that I know what to do and I can't do it? You know, and it's that powerlessness. But I still think if it, you know, if only I just do, I just manage better. I'm going to be in a better state of mind. I'm going to do better tomorrow. And then it just doesn't happen. And it's been 11 years of this. And you know, I absolutely am that person who produces confusion rather than harmony. Every time I try and control, like where it is we go, what it is we do, what time things happen, like everything. I try and control everything. And it absolutely, and it just produces so much confusion among those I love, not this feeling of mutual love and harmony, even with those that I love the most, like my parents. So anyways, I just thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Katie S. from California. And now we'll have Kim T. share with us. Good morning, Kim.
Hi, this is Kim T., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. Thanks so much for your service this morning. And all of the shares and the reading, I'm typically on the earlier meeting, and I was on the earlier meeting, but I couldn't stay awake. I kept falling asleep, and this has been so profound to be on and to listen to your shares. And, you know, I came back to the program because I literally couldn't stop eating, and there was, my choice was, you know, either come back to OA or kill myself, because I just knew another diet wouldn't work. Somebody said something about a diet earlier, and I thought a diet at that point in time was just ludicrous to me, because I had tried everything and so many, you know, so many various permutations of all the diets out there. So in my mind, killing myself was the option. And it's just, you know, I was thinking about that as I was listening to people, and that's so crazy. And that's my disease, as well as this entire paragraph. I also remember when I first read this, I thought, well, that's not me. I'm not bossy. I don't try to control people, yada, yada, yada. But the longer I'm in this program and the longer I attend these meetings, I realize that every single one of these words applies to me. And I wanted to wrest satisfaction and happiness out of everything if you would only do as I wanted. And there's no better place for me to see that kind of behavior and those kind of thoughts than in my marriage and with my 20-year-old son. It's just, it's so magnified that it's just unbelievable to me. So what's also unbelievable to me is that I am recovered today and that I am grateful for this program. I'm grateful. Somebody said earlier about, you know, that I live in this age when I can do this, and that recovery is available through the 12 steps for compulsive overeaters and people with all kinds of eating diseases and illnesses and maladies. So, yeah, just thanks for being there, and it's just been profound listening today. So have a great day. I pass.
Thank you so much, Kim T. from Colorado. And we'll now close the meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Dana P. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning, Dana P., compulsive overeater, bulimic, anorexic in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Dana. We'll now be having the recording shut off, and then we're going to be all pressing star one so that we can say the Serenity Prayer together. Okay, let's go ahead and press star one.
God.